Hi, I'm Marion McPartland. Today on Piano Jazz, my guest is Herbie Hancock. He joined me on Piano Jazz in 1987, shortly after the release of Round Midnight, a film about the jazz life in which Herbie appeared and wrote the score.
You know, no wonder it's taken me so long to catch up with you, Herbie. You did everything. And I just saw your new movie, Round Midnight, and it's absolutely terrific.
Thank you very much, Mary.
And I hope it runs forever, because to see a real jazz movie with people like you in it, and Dexter Gordon and Freddie Hubbard, all the musicians are in it, it's just so heartwarming to see a film like that. Well, before we go any further, will you play one of the tunes that you wrote for the movie?
I'd be glad to.
What's this one?
This is a song called Chan's Song, and it's a song that, in the film, it's a song that could be written by a musician who is in the latter part of his years for his daughter. But the problem I had is that it's supposed to somehow have a spirit in it that could be viable even 10 or 15 years after his death. So it had to have some elements in it that could be translated into a song of that the young people could really get into, you know, mm-hmm. but written by an older guy, you know, even someone older than me.
Oh, you're just a young kid.
Anyway, his is a Chan song.
Thank you.
Oh, that's so pretty, Herbie.
Thank you.
Nice
thank
melody, and it has great harmony, and it's got everything a good song should have.
Thank
rhythmic
you.
Feeling. You know, it's great to see you back at the piano again. I must say that you seem to have been through a whole career change. I mean, after Rocket and you're doing so many things. I mean, you've got so many things going: arranger, pianist, composer, rock star. And leader with your own group, because I love the quartet with Branford, Ron Carter, and Alphonse. That's your regular quartet, isn't it, Alphonse?
Well, actually, what I've been doing since about 1977, something like that, is I've been forming bands that are made of band leaders.
Really?
So I don't really have a permanent band. The best musicians I know are usually band leaders. They usually have their own bands.
How did you get started? I mean, did you start playing professionally in Chicago? I really don't know.
Yeah, well,
all these things.
I started playing piano when I was 7, back in Chicago. And when I went to college, I would come back in the summers and work in the post office usually, but also I'd take some gigs, you know. Even before college, while I was still in high school, sometimes I'd sneak in clubs and sit in, but I was really learning then, you know. But they had a lot of jam sessions during that time, and so it was a nice breeding ground for learning about jazz.
A lot of good musicians in Chicago
then
and
excellent
now.
Excellent guys, yeah, excellent, you know.
And then you started, well, let's see, was Donald Byrd, was that the first?
That was the first. He was the guy that brought me out of Chicago and brought me to New York, yeah.
But you were already starting writing. Hadn't you written some things?
Right. I had started writing some things when I was in college.
Because I've got a picture of it. I've got you on the front of an album cover with your big, maybe your biggest hit, Watermelon Man.
Right.
And you just look like a kid. Well, you still look like a kid. But, I mean, you looked even more like a kid at that time. An innocent-looking little guy play with the... I mean, this is such a hit still, isn't it?
Yeah, it...
Watermelon
it's
Man.
It's amazing how well it's still doing after all that time. That tune was written in 1962, so that's 25 years ago.
Oh, goodness.
Because it's 87 now.
Well, you've written so many besides that one. Because to me, one of my favorites is Dolphin Dance. Would you play that?
Sure.
I'd love to hear it. Oh, that thing kills me. Thank and you. I bet you never played it quite that way before.
No,
it's not an arrangement. I know
that. It always comes out different.
It's great. I mean, that's far different from the way I've heard you play it
before,
which is understandable because it seems like you've always had such a great harmonic concept, but it keeps getting better. Different.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I like those kinds.
Well, then in the club when I heard you play in the Blue Note. You played a tune. It was kind of a surprise to me. The Limehouse Blues. Here you play that.
Oh yeah, yeah. We opened up with that.
Think we could do that?
Yeah, could we do that together?
Well, I'd love to try, but you took that away at such a hot tempo. I mean, maybe you'll just cool it down a little for me.
I took it at a hot tempo because I had a drummer and a bass player that could carry it and
Boy,
support it.
Why did they ever? So, all right, here we go with Limehouse Blues.
Thank you.
pretty nice. Pretty nice. So that, you know, you played a couple of nice changes in there, and I'd hear it after I played the bass line. I realized how hard a bass player has to work, you know.
Yeah,
to make,
see,
it, make
I'm
a
not
nice
used to doing
line.
It.
It's hard, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, and we never figured out an ending for that. So, but we managed one, didn't we?
We figured one out, and we figured it out as we went along.
Right.
But, you know, the only thing about that, I would like to have played more. I started to feel good about being in that key. I really like that tune.
It's a nice, yeah, me too.
Yeah, I really like that.
It's a nice key.
You know, when I think of all the records that you've made, I mean, I can't keep track. You were so many years with Miles Davis,
right.
weren't you? 63,
right.
was it?
Yeah, from 63 to 68. So actually 5.5 years I was with him.
I was
and I still continue to record with him after that, too.
Yeah. Do you still now, ever?
I haven't in a while. I saw Miles recently, and he asked me if I'd write something for his next record. But that's coming up, I think, pretty soon. So I got something I had started to work on before for Miles, and I hope to develop it in time for this record. I hope he likes it.
Back to the movie.
Right, right.
That music was done live, wasn't it?
Right, yeah. It was
That's
done,
what intrigues me.
That was a very important thing to accomplish with the film, is having the music live, because Bertrand Tavernier, the director, really wanted to capture the spirit of live jazz. And you can't do it with playback, because he wanted the people to be able to see visually what happens, and you need to see the physical response that musicians exhibit as they're playing against each other and with each other.
One of the tunes that you wrote was taken from a Bud Powell piece, so you turned it around. Or why did
right.
you? I mean, what was the reason for that? Any particular?
Well, of course, in order to be really authentic to a club situation in Paris, especially at that time, which is late 50s, early 60s, in
mm-hmm.
that area, because a lot of musicians that went from America to Paris would work with a kind of a pickup band over there. They wouldn't take a whole group. And so you wound up playing a lot of standards, things that everybody knew. So we did have a lot of standards in the film. But when you make a film, you got to pay people for these things. And so sometimes it gets very expensive to try to purchase the rights to songs for the film. It gets expensive.
Sure.
And we were running into a problem with one of Bud Powell's tunes. But what Bertrand Tavernier, the director of Round Midnight, asked me to do was if I could write a different melody on top of the same structure that Bud Powell used for his tune. And I said, it's not impossible, but it's definitely not an easy thing to do. Write a melody, yes, but how good can it be? Anyway, I said that I would try it. And I think even as Bertrand Tavernier was standing there, I kind of went to the piano because I heard some melody going through my head, just as a way to start it. I thought, maybe if I can just start it, it'll give me a direction. And I started it, and the thing just started coming out and coming out and coming out. Pretty soon, the whole thing was kind of done before our eyes.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's the best kind of tune that sort of writes itself, isn't it?
Right. I was amazed. And Bertrand loves it, too. He loves it. And so we were able to do it.
Well, what was
Still Time.
The original, I mean, what was a little bit of the original tune? Because it's one Bud Powell tune I didn't really know too well.
Yeah, Time Waits.
Time Waits, yeah.
It's something like...
Pretty tune.
It's a very pretty tune.
So how did you turn it around?
I turned it around. Since the original melody is going, I made this melody kind of go up. You know, it's not exactly coming down, going up in the scale the way the original goes down in the scale, but it still has some kind of motion that's going up and coming down at the same time.
Well, the same notes, more or less, hasn't it?
Yeah, the same flavor, you know.
Yeah.
It starts out with the same note.
Is a pretty song. Well, I know it's taken from Bud's tune, Bud Powell's tune, but it has your own stamp on it.
Oh.
your tunes have their own quality to them.
Thank you very much, Marian.
I'm Marian McPartland. My guest today is Herbie Hancock. This is Piano Jazz for National Public Radio. Let's do one of Cole Porter's tunes.
Great.
All right. You start this one off. Or you want to do an ad-lib chorus, or should we start it straight or in tempo? How?
Oh, hey, that's a good idea, to do some kind of ad-lib thing
in
the beginning.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we could trade ad-lib sections before we go.
Okay.
Want to do that?
Yep.
Okay. And we won't say how many bars of which we're going to do. We're just kind of...
All right.
All right.
Herbie Hancock is on the right, and I, Marian McPartland, am on the left. And here we go with Easy to Love.
Thank you.
that's great. And it came out A flat, and then I don't know, at the end.
Because I did that.
D flat.
D flat sus chord. So it's just kind of a nice chord.
Yeah, because you use that a lot.
Yeah, I do.
but it's great. It's such a pretty chord.
Mm-hmm.
It's so pretty.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a nice texture. You know?
But that's your one of your many great talents is textures. And,
thank you. It's funny how we can use, when talking about something that's oral, that we hear, A-U-R-A-L, oral.
Right, oral.
And talking about something that we hear, we can use a word like textures, which has to do with a completely different sense.
Like a feeling of something.
Right. Or we talk about colors, you know, in music and all of these things, you know.
But it all seems to fit. I think people seem to know instinctively what is meant
by that when they
hear it.
I think it's there would be no way to describe music unless you used terms that came from other senses.
You want to do a little unrehearsed, little talking about textures, colors, and so on, just a little free piece.
Good, okay. Thank you.
Well, I guess you couldn't exactly.
All right. Good.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah, that's very interesting.
It's hard to, in fact, it's hard to stop. It's terrible. I get self-indulgent. Right. You know, I just hear just one more idea. Just one more idea.
Oh, yeah, that's great, though. Because I think it keeps the mind active.
Yeah, I need my mind being kept active at all times. Well, I'm going to do a Rodgers and Hart tune for you.
Great. I love this stuff.
Just as opposed to that last thing, which I don't expect to hear everybody sing or whistle. maybe they can sing or whistle this one, which is one of my favorites of all time. It never entered my mind.
Oh, beautiful.
Do you play that? I'm sure you do.
Yeah, I haven't played it in some time, but I have played it over the years, and it's really a beautiful song. I'm looking forward to hearing you.
Thank you.
Chords.
Thank you. One chorus will do it on that tune. It's one of my real favorites. I guess I love those masochistic lyrics. Now I even have to scratch my back myself. Things like that.
About textures. You did some beautiful textures.
You know. I get kind of nervous with you watching me. You know, I'm thinking to myself, this is Herbie Hancock. I play playing this too.
I'm sitting here with my eyes closed, enjoying it. You know, I have no idea what you're doing. It just sounds great.
Well, I tell you, it's I've waited so long to catch up with you, and now it's all been so worth it to patiently wait all these years for you to have the time.
We've been trying this for a long time.
I know.
Years, right?
I know, literally, because I've had the show for about 6-7 years. So.
Amazing.
So I'm just thrilled that you've been here, and I know your schedule is hectic always, and so therefore I appreciate you taking time out to come over here and
it was my great pleasure.
Knock me out with all your stuff, all your different stuff. And I mean, I haven't half touched on your career. You know, people say, why didn't you ask him about, or why didn't you ask him about so-and-so, but we're just going to have to do a whole other show.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's all fit that in somewhere. Well, let's wind up with one more tune, Herbie. One more duet, and again, I say Herbie Hancock's piano and he himself are on the right side. I, Marian McPartland, am on the left. And we're going to play that Old Black Magic by Harold Arlen.
Great.
So,
we're gonna try this
is Living Dangerously, Herbie.
Thank you. You've been listening to Piano Jazz with host Marian McPartland. Marian's guest has been Herbie Hancock in this program, which originally aired in 1985. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. The producer, Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer, Bob Liebert, mastering engineer, Bill Sexton, additional post-production mastering, David Mitchell. The executive producer, William D. Hay. Piano Jazz is made possible by Save America's Treasures, a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Park Service Department of the Interior. The original program was made possible by a grant from Exxon Corporation. Support for Piano Jazz comes from Fazioli Pianos, manufactured in Sacile, Italy, and crafted by artisans, played in concert halls worldwide. Fazioli Pianos, on the web at fazioli.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR contributors, which include the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, helping people build measurably better lives, on the web at hewlett.org, and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, recognizing exceptionally creative individuals. This year's MacArthur Fellows are at macfound.org. This is NPR.